This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2018, held in Harrisonburg, Virginia on March 2 and 3.
Well, good morning, everybody. I think we'll go ahead and try to get started here, or we're going to run into a time crunch. So the title of this workshop is The Time Crunch. Hopefully in the right place. So I'd like for you to think about the end of your life. If you have the luxury of reflecting on your life before you die, and you think back over your life and it's scrolling before you like a gigantic timeline full of pictures, full of emotions, full of decisions, relationships that you had. What will be your response as you make that reflection? We had a brother in our church who just passed away, Brother Elmer Schrock, and he was given this privilege. He was diagnosed with a fast-moving kind of cancer. He had a couple of weeks, and he knew it. And he was able to spend that time preparing for his death and thinking about his life. When we get to that point, what will we say? Will we say, I have not lived in vain, like this poem is suggesting here? Or will we say, I have lived in vain, and I have wasted it. And I guess the ultimate question is not what do we think of our life, but what will God say to us? Will he say, like he said to those servants, well done, thou good and faithful servant? Or will he have another evaluation? So that's the question before us today, is how to use our time, how to manage it. And just take a look at this poem by Emily Dickinson. And I'd like for you to respond to this poem after we read it. What do you think of it? What's it saying, and do you agree with the message? If I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain. If I can ease one life the aching, or cool one pain, or help one fainting robin unto his nest again, I shall not live in vain. What do you like about the poem? The focus is on helping others, yes. What do you think is missing? Well, nothing about why. God is not in the picture. It seems just a little simplistic. If you help one fainting robin, you help one person with their pain, your life somehow is going to be worthwhile overall. Yet, I like the thought. So we have this time before us, we need to use it somehow, and we're struggling with time. Just think about time. It's quite mysterious. Time, what is it? Can you define it? Can you control it? Time, it's something that is much bigger than us. And you know, I think it's interesting that man, in all of his efforts of science and technology to control the world, and we've made great strides in controlling space, in controlling our interaction in the three physical dimensions with the world, but we have not gotten very far in controlling time. It moves at the same rate all the time, and we can't do anything about it. And so I think that, that frustrates us. Sometimes we have too much of it, like when we're a child, or we're in prison, or maybe we're an older person. But right now, for a lot of us, we don't have enough. And we can't do anything about that. Think about God. He's outside of time, so he's not frustrated by it. But he sent Jesus into time. And Jesus had a one-shot opportunity to show us how to manage time. And he came, and for about 3 years of public ministry, he showed us how God would deal with time. So I think we ought to pay attention to that. How would God deal with time if he had it? Well, we can see how he would deal with it. Well, you would think that a person as important as Jesus, the who is God, the creator of the universe, would have some sort of elaborate way to deal with time, right? Some sort of elaborate scheduling mechanism, like something a little better than the president of the United States would use, which typically the president, historically at least, has had an elaborate schedule which has been planned months in advance, and every minute of his day is scheduled by dozens of aides who are just, that's their whole job, is working on managing the president's time because it's so important. And everything he does matters. Well, Jesus didn't have this. But Jesus' life was characterized by a focused, yet very unhurried way of dealing with time. And his use of time was characterized by love. People knew that Jesus loved them, and Jesus loved the children. That was clear. Jesus accomplished his mission. He said, "I have finished the work you gave me." Jesus knew what he was about, and his mission was simple, and it was compelling. It was clear. He said once, "My food is to do the will of him that sent me." Another place he gave his mission is healing the brokenhearted, setting the captives free. He knew what he was about. And we see in his life a rhythm of intense ministry followed by times of solitary refreshment. So we're going to look at some of those aspects today. We're going to look at finding love in our use of time, finding focus, and finding a rhythmic life of intensity and renewal. So looking at love, like I mentioned this morning already, the first and greatest commandment is to love God and love our neighbor as ourselves. So it's pretty clear what God wants us to be about. He's given us some, at least some very big and broad categories. Part of our problem in time management, I think, comes from a frustration with time that stems from our misguided priorities, our drivenness to get things done that we shouldn't actually be worried about getting done. We're often driven by a need to succeed, a need to make sure that I don't fail in this, whatever I'm doing. And often it is important to succeed, but our motives for it are wrong a lot of times. We're wanting to succeed to gain recognition, status, just to feel good about ourselves. Or maybe we feel driven by the need to live well, the need to have a lot of things, to keep up with the general expectation of other people in my church, which may be not based in reality. But that drives us, makes us really frustrated with our time. So while we want to love and serve God and our neighbor, we feel these other pressures. And it's hard to deal with that. So I think that finding that simplicity and that clarity of mission that Jesus had has a lot to do with saying what my life is not about. And once we actually make those statements and we say, my life is not about having a bigger or better house. My house is fine. You know, it's nothing impressive, but it works and we're happy. And making that kind of commitment and saying that out loud to you and your family and your wife so everybody knows it, it can simplify things a lot. So choices like that that reflect contentment and get us away from that drivenness, it's going to help us to live well and simply and manage our time well. So how do we make love a priority in our use of time? Well, I think it starts obviously with a daily connection with God. When we get up in the morning, we're connecting with God, we're worshiping God, focusing on our love for Him, and we're praying for other people, focusing on our love for them. And then as we go throughout the day, every interaction with every person needs to be characterized by love. And people that are busy, we have a hard time with this because people tend to get in our way. And we don't know what to do with interruptions to our plans and our intentions. They don't fit what we had in mind. But looking at the life of Jesus, interruptions was a big part of Him fulfilling His mission. And if our mission is to love and serve people, that it can be the same way for us. Interruptions can be thought of as God sent adjustments to our schedule, which actually are going to help us do what He has in mind for us. They're not frustrating. They're not frustrating to our mission. And recently, I just got this picture that I've been treasuring, and I haven't been able to quite get it back since then. About a month ago, I had this day of clarity. And you know, every now and then you get these epiphanies, these moments where you just see something like you never saw it before. And I had this day when the scales kind of fell away, and I saw this, what I've been talking about, how that love can be, love is why I'm here. And interacting with love with my students, with every interaction, that's what this is about. And that's going to be life-changing for them as they experience me in that way. And if it's not there, then no matter how effective I am in getting all my stuff done and in accomplishing my to-do list, my life will be in vain if they don't sense that love from me in every interaction. And I saw how much I miss people by being absent-minded, by choosing to think about the pressure of the moment rather than these made in God's image people right in front of me. And so I determined that it's going to change. And so, of course, we're still working on it. So does that mean if we adopt this new mindset that we're going to lose all the sense of urgency for our to-do lists? We're going to just sort of turn into this quivering blob of warm fuzziness? Well, let's talk about focus. That's the next subject here. Focus. A couple of books I'll be referring to here have helped me in thinking about focus. One is by Matt Perman, and the title is What's Best Next? Kind of a tongue twister there. Gospel-driven productivity is what it's about. And it's a productivity book for Christians, which is great because so many of the productivity books out there are not for Christians. And so this one is. And he talks, so gospel-driven productivity. God wants us to be productive. Obviously, He created us. He gave us a mandate to take care of the earth. And getting things done actually does glorify God. And this book is focused on or targeted toward people who are involved in knowledge work. And so I think for a lot of us who are kind of making a transition in our work or have made from physical work out in the farm or in our businesses to something that's more in the office or dealing with people, we're finding out that we have to learn how to work again. It's actually a lot harder to get things done. And the reason, well, let's just talk about what knowledge work is here a little bit. Knowledge work is any work whose focus consists of generating ideas, communicating, and leading. That's knowledge work. If your work has to do with generating ideas, communicating, or leading, you're a knowledge worker, and you need to think about work in a... It gets more complicated than it was before. It's harder to be productive, harder to manage your time. So I think everybody is a knowledge worker, everybody that's here, in the sense that you are leading your personal life and your family life. Those things, so this applies to everybody in some way. So back to that thing, what is my life about? Well, it's about love. But it needs to take a particular form. It needs to be shaped into a clear mission. So I want to talk about how to focus that into a sense of mission and bring the knowledge work thing into this. For a knowledge work person, a clear sense of mission is extremely important. Because it's very easy just to be, with physical work, it's often pretty clear what you're doing. With knowledge work, with teaching, leading a school, whatever you're doing, it's pretty easy just to get spread out into all kinds of directions. So it's important to focus that mission. I'd just like to talk about my mission and our mission as a family and how that's developed over the years. So when I was in my first year of teaching, I was single. And I told myself frequently as I was teaching, this is my life. I am focused on nothing else. I'm giving myself fully to teaching. And I was able to do that because I was single. So most evenings, every morning, I was teaching. I was thinking about that all the time. And it almost killed me. But I was able to focus on it. Well, life has gotten a lot more complicated since then. And I can see that it's not going to stop getting more complicated. There's more duties and obligations. So a few years ago when I was ordained, that caused a crisis for me. I wasn't sure what my life was about. I wasn't sure if I could keep teaching. Another complicating factor is that we have this small business, a pottery business, and that has actually been a source of confusion in some ways because I was wondering where I should put my energy. But things have settled down, thankfully. Pottery, we've decided, it's a business, but it's a hobby. Okay, so making that clarification was extremely helpful. It's a hobby that earns a little money, but its purpose for us is to give us energy, not to take energy. So if we're clear about that, then we can say, okay, no, we can't sell pottery to you. Sorry. That's just our default answer for wholesale inquiries. No, we can't. We're not interested in growing our business. It's the size that it needs to be, and that's where it's going to stay. And teaching and pastoring have become a lot more clear to me as I have been able to see that they are both actually the same thing. That teaching and pastoring are both serving the church. They're both making disciples. They're both involved teaching. It's just the locations are across the parking lot from each other. And another place where that happens is at home with my family. Almost the same type of thing I do at school and at church happens at home with my family. So really, I don't have to feel this conflict of what am I about? And it took a couple years to pull that together. So all of those are ways that I have been able to, over a process of time, talking with different people about this, to bring focus to this mission of loving God and loving my neighbor. So once your mission is focused, then there is a specific way, and that's what I'm going to talk about next, a way to bring that focus down into the nitty-gritty of daily life. And that's where this yearly, quarterly, weekly, and daily checkpoint thing comes in. So, first of all, yearly goals. So, I have a book that I think you should read. It's called Best Year Ever by Michael Hyde. It just came out about a month ago. And he talks about this thing of yearly goals. And they're great. I think everybody should do this. So this is different than New Year's resolutions. Lots of people know what New Year's resolutions are, but New Year's resolutions tend to be these one-time hurrahs, which just tend to fizzle out in about a month or two, versus a yearly goal, which you spend a lot more time writing, for one, and you think about how you're going to do it. You use very specific language to describe it. And he talks about it in the book here. And you're very intentional then throughout the year about carrying these goals out. You do this in a day you set aside, you call it a yearly review, where you take a whole day, or maybe you take several partial days, but you go somewhere where you can focus and pray and really think about priorities, what they should be, and you write these goals out. 7 to 10 is a good number. Things that you want to accomplish in the year, or habits that you want to form. You write them out, and then you divide them up into quarterly goals. So it's pretty hard to think about 7 to 10 things at one time. It's a whole lot easier to think about 2 to 3 things. So you take these and you divide this into quarters. And so for these 3 months, a quarter, you're going to focus on these 2 to 3 major goals. So by the end of the year, you've gotten your 7 to 10 goals accomplished, and you focused on them one quarter at a time. So you put those 2 to 3 goals on your calendar for that quarter, and at the beginning of every quarter, you have a quarterly review where you think about what you're planning to do for the quarter. And every quarter, you repeat that. And then every week, guess what you do? You have a weekly review, a time, 15 minutes or so, where you think about what you're going to do the next week. And you also reflect on what you did last week and how that went. And you're connecting those things, those 2 to 3 weekly goals that you have, with your 2 to 3 quarterly goals. So you're trying to make sure that you are prioritizing those things in what you're actually doing with your week. And of course, you have a daily system, a daily review, where you think about what you're going to do that day and what happened yesterday, and you mark out some priorities for the day. And this is quite a bit different than just general to-do list. Because if you just have a to-do list, what tends to happen is you have a great big list of things, and you're not quite sure how they connect with the bigger picture of your life. You're not quite sure if they're the right things, but they're the things that are urgent and right in front of you. The difference here is you've connected what you're doing every day with those big goals that were set at the beginning of the year and which were prioritized for that quarter. And also, every day, if you take a look at your handout on the back, the top left says New Weekly Big Three. So this is a section in this planner that I have up here that has a weekly goal section. So here's where you put the weekly big three. You can see what mine was. End well with 12th English. Get caught up on checking. That's almost always on there. And plan, pray for team retreat. That was happening that week. And then over on the right side, here is a daily goal sheet. And this is just something I found online. You could easily make this on Excel. But the big thing on here is that it has a section for 3 main priorities. I think that's very critical. If you're going to get the main things done, you have to make sure that they are thought of as the main things. So you have a space for three main priorities, and it could be as low as one main priority. Then there's space below for other priorities. Other to-dos are not priorities, they're to-dos. So at the end of the day, you know how this goes. It's almost impossible to get your to-do list totally knocked out every day. And if you just have a flat to-do list with no priorities, you almost always feel discouraged about how you did that day because you look at this giant to-do list and it's half done or less than half done. But if you have priorities like this, you can knock them out. And if you get at least one of them knocked out and put a big check mark beside it, you know that at the end of the day, that's major progress. You've done something significant that day. You're really getting somewhere. And the rest of them, the rest of the smaller things can be pushed off to another day. And you know they're not as important. So this is just how we're built as humans. It's impossible for people to focus on lots of things at one time and to keep them all in priority. Recognizing our limitations as people, we can't focus on a huge list and really know what's going on. We have to make it small enough to manage. So a word about planners. Teachers use lesson planners, and that's great, but I think you should also have an additional planner for other priorities. This one's from Michael Hyatt. It's called the Full Focus Planner. And it really is pretty great. It has space in for annual goals, and quarterly goals and weekly goals, and all that stuff is built right into it. So this whole planner just lasts one quarter. So it's not a whole year, and it's kind of expensive. So I have it, but I don't think I'm going to get another one because I'm just going to kind of design my own system that works kind of like that, you know, a lot cheaper. So that page there on the top right is kind of based on his idea, but my implementation of it. Carefully manage one of your most valuable resources, your attention. So I've got a list here on the front again under time management strategies. First of all, single task. Multitasking used to be a buzzword. It's not anymore. Multitasking, some people can multitask, I admit. I'm not one of them. But what they're saying now is that nobody can multitask very well. People think they can multitask, but they're actually just single tasking in rapid succession. And some people are good at switching their attention very rapidly from one thing to another. I'm not one of those people. My wife knows very well. But it just shows us that attention is a finite resource. And we've got to manage our attention carefully. Be careful with your attention. You can't control it as well as you think. So, manage your tasks. Have a single inbox, number two there. Have a system you can depend on. One of the things that keeps us from maximum productivity is having all these things floating around in our brain of things we said we would do, things we're supposed to be doing. We're trying to make sure we don't miss anything. And if we don't have a really good, reliable system for keeping that stuff where it's supposed to be, we're never going to be at maximum productivity because we're always flustered and trying to make sure we don't miss anything. So if we have a system that works, we can have a mind that is free to function like it should. So single inboxes just means that on your desk, you have a place where all of your incoming papers go. Always. They always go to the same place. And you know, anything, a bill, whatever, it's always going right there. And then you process out of that. So there's not multiple places for incoming things. You also need this single inbox idea for your to-do list. And that can be done different ways. If you have a smartphone with Google on it, you can use Google Reminders. Just to set a reminder that you're going to look at always. Whenever you sit down at your planner, you're going to look at those incoming reminders and you're going to transfer them to the right place in your plan. That way you're going to make sure you have a system that works, and it could be different for different people. Time chunking. is meaning that you do the same type of activities together. So email, lots of opinions about email, but it has become a beast for a lot of people just because it takes a lot of time. Do all your emails at one time. So the beautiful thing about email is that it does not have to be responded to right away. And that's the nature of email. So one thing with all these technologies that we have for communicating these days is that we've got to understand the relative urgency of each one. Email is pretty low down as far as urgency, because you can wait, and people know that. And if they think you should respond right away, you can tell them, I do my email once a day at 5 o'clock, and that's when I'm going to respond to you. Because if we're always looking at our email all the time, it's that attention thing again. Our mind is going to that email, and then we forget what we were working on, and it takes a few seconds to get back to there and pick up where we left off. So I advise turning off notifications for email. Why do you need to be notified when you get an email? That's not the nature of email. You shouldn't have to know when you got an email. You should be able to go to your email when you want to, when it suits you, look at it and respond. So chunk all your emailing time together. Calling, you can make phone calls. Chunk them all in your schedule at one place, because you kind of get in the mode of calling. It's just like, I'm going to call this person, I'm going to call this person, I'm going to call this person. You don't stop and agonize over every one. You just do it. And then all your calls are out of the way. You're checking if you're a teacher. Try to do all that at one time. And the way I'm talking here, I'm just, you know, this sounds like I've got it all down. I tell you, I don't. These are ideals. I'm going to go back and try to implement them once again. Time boxing, number 4. If you have some tasks in front of you that aren't particularly pleasant, then you time box. What that means is you say, okay, I'm going to study for this class for 30 minutes. And then I'm going to write these letters that I've been putting off, and I'm going to work on those for 15 minutes. So you write those things in your schedule. You have a timer. You set it. You turn it on, and then you start doing it. I mean, this is like what you do for children, right? Well, it works for me, too. It's like, sometimes you just can't start doing something. So you say, okay, I hate doing that, but I'm going to do it for 15 minutes. And you set your timer and you do it. And then you actually find that once you get into it, you can actually keep going further than that once you get started. So that's something I've done quite a bit of. Clean desk, number 5. There's a statistic out there that if you have a clean desk, you can stick with a task 60% longer. And I believe it. It's, again, that's back to attention. If your desk is messy, you can't focus. Well, people are different. I know some people say they like a messy desk, and it expresses their amazing personality and all of that. Well, I used to believe that too, actually. I've changed. I've become one of those really boring people. But it's really helping me. Get a few things done. So I've got my inbox over there. It might be kind of full, but at least I know where stuff is. And my desk isn't all cluttered with all this junk. I'm not sure what to start on first. And then routines and rituals. We don't have a lot of time here, but one of the big things here is having an ideal week plan. So if you look back here on the back of this thing, this is just trying to schedule, this is what an ideal week would look like. This is when I do certain things. And you can see there's a lot of space in here for variation. And, of course, the word ideal means that most of the time it's not going to work out this way. But at least you have a plan. At this time of day, on this day, I do this thing. And after school, certain things kind of fit together. Like on Tuesdays, for me, I have a teacher meeting. So after the teacher meeting, I have Tech, Abigail, which she was the teacher's aide at that time. And so I would try to, after the teacher's meeting, I'd always try to make sure that teachers are doing fine with their computers, everything's working. I'd have my conversation with the teacher's aide about what needs to be done. And all that stuff would kind of fit naturally right after the teacher meeting. So I tried to always, I was in the mood for it. I just talked to the teachers. It's a good time to do it. So I tried to make use of that and put it into an ideal week plan. Notice a lot of free time on here, like in the evenings especially. I'm really running behind on time here. Running to one of those time crunches. So just a few comments here about that evening time. I was going to talk about it a lot more. But that free time at home is incredibly important. So moving into the next section here very quickly, the one about energy. Life is a rhythm of stress and renewal. And a lot of this comes from a book here, The Power of Full Engagement. And this stuff has been pretty powerful for me to think about. One of the biggest things in trying to get stuff done is energy. And so here's a statement to think about. The secret to becoming more productive is not managing your time, but managing your energy. Because so often, I have had a revival in time management. Because by nature, I am not a very structured person, but I just long to be, right? So every year or about every 6 months, I have this big revival, and I plan exactly how my life is going to work for the next, you know, for the rest of my life. And it works for a fairly short time. But one of the things that sabotages that plan almost every time is a lack of energy. It's like, I should be doing this now, but you know what? I am tired. I'm exhausted. So learning to manage that energy and have energy is just incredibly important. And so thinking about these four domains here, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, all of these things are areas where we need energy. And for teachers, you really get taxed on a couple of these, especially mental, emotional, and spiritual, and physical. They all matter a lot. And I remember my first year of teaching, I was just exhausted. The end of every day, it just toasted me very consistently. And every day was an emotional roller coaster. So my sympathies for first year teachers, but yeah, it just shows the incredible need for resiliency in all these areas. So how is this built? How do you build up your energy? Well, think of yourself as an athlete. Maybe if you're a knowledge worker or any kind of worker, you're an athlete. And if you're a teacher or a knowledge worker, you're a mental athlete. How do athletes get stronger? Do they just go out there and run a marathon right away? No, what they do is they build up their strength for a while, and then they have a period of recovery. And that's what we need to do with what we're doing. We need to stress ourselves for a while and then have a period of recovery. Stress and recovery, or stress and renewal. See, stress is actually a very good thing. It builds the body. That's how your muscles get built, when they're stressed. But if you're just continually stressing them, you will die. You have to have a period of recovery. And so that's where this thing comes in about the time at the end of the day. Leave school at 5:30 and stay out of school. Go home and enjoy your family. Go home and re-energize, love your children, and forget about that stuff at school. Saturday is the same way. So life should be not like a marathon where you're running for 26 miles. If you've seen marathon runners or pictures of them, and they always look really haggard, really tired, really worn out by the time they're done with that run. Life shouldn't be like a marathon, but it should be like a series of sprints where a sprint runner is going to run for a short distance. He's all charged up. He's ready to go. And when he gets in there, he's running for all he's worth. And then he's tired and he takes a break and recovers. So if you think of your life like that, it's a series of sprints. Every day, it's another sprint. But I've got to be ready for it. I've got to be emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally ready for this. And in order to be ready for that, you've got to break from it. Otherwise, you're just going to be one of these marathon runners who's killing yourself. And everybody's going to be able to see it. And it's going to have a cost. You're going to burn out. So all of these things can grow, these domains, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And you just think about the habits that you have for renewal spiritually. Many of us have those habits. In the morning, we take a time of spiritual renewal. That's incredibly important. What about these other domains? Are we doing that too? Physical stamina has a lot to do with energy. And so being fit, we can't neglect that. We've gotta work on keeping our bodies in good shape. We're gonna be able to serve God and our people a lot better if we're physically fit. We're gonna have more energy. People who are fit don't need to sleep as much, actually. Bringing up the subject of sleep, everybody needs to sleep and get enough of it. 7 to 8 hours is needed for by at least 80% of adults. So, in summary here, remember, love. Love is the most important thing in every moment, in every interaction. And then hone your focus. Your mission is not to everyone in the whole world. It's limited to a place and a time and a group of people. Find that mission. And then set yearly, quarterly, weekly, daily priorities. Chunk your tasks. Rule your email. Don't let it rule you. Establish routines and an ideal week. And then stay energized by balancing stress and recovery. Your life is a series of sprints, not a long marathon. Looks like it's time to end here. Thank you very much.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.